The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon, everybody. Brady here. Arnie's gone, so as Arnie would say in his honor, not all unaccounted for. Right. Rich is here. Brady's here. And we are live at the UPS store for Carmichael Street in Essex, and we've already got stories.
Yeah, aren't you going to ask me if I'm handsome or whatever he says every day?
How you doing, handsome? What's going on? I guess I'm big boy, so how am I doing then? How's that?
I'm doing great. Oh, my gosh. The pizza has arrived. There's cupcakes made in the shape of baseballs and footballs, and I'll tell you what, if you're hungry and you take Route 15, maybe home to Essex Center or Jericho or wherever you go out on 15, there's enough food for an army in here.
The royal baby was born this week. Someone in the royal family had a baby. I don't know if it's, yeah. I don't know, the prince and duchess, I believe.
The whole thing is ridiculous.
They had a baby this week, and they've given us the royal treatment today as well. They've got all kinds of food. So, yeah, if you need, where else could you get dinner and send out a package? This is the only place you could do it.
That's right.
So we are at the Essex location, the UPS store for Carmichael Street in Essex. We'll tell you all about that. Rich, as we said, we are Arnie-less today. Arnie is out on location for the next 2 weeks.
I get to finish my sentences for an entire 2 hours.
Well, I'm going to do my Arnie impression at times, so might not get to. Arnie is going to join us every day for the next 2 weeks. He's in Los Angeles. He's helping take care of his mom. We wish her the best, wish his family the best. He's still going to be a part of the show. He's just not a part of the show today. He is in Los Angeles. He's traveling, so we weren't sure if traffic, you know, and all that and flight cancellations, we were going to be able to get him in. So
traffic?
L.A.? I've heard they have a little there. Now, you, as Arnie would say, this is where he tells you you're not big time and you've never been to L.A. in L.A. proper.
No, I've been to L.A. twice in the last year, and that was for the first time ever. And for those of us that complain about trying to get out of Burlington up the hill at 5 o'clock and Shelburne Road and Williston Road, you have nothing to complain about. Try L.A.
So Arnie is in L.A. He's there for the next 2 weeks, and we are soldiering on without him today. We'll tell you all about that. We're going to start this show in a different way. Momentarily, we're going to get on the guest line and do a guest at the beginning of the show. And I can only think of about three times in the history of this incarnation of the show where we've started the show with a guest.
Yes, it's an important person. So
yeah, we'll be talking with Fluto Shinzawa, who covers the Bruins for The Athletic, formerly of the Boston Globe. Game set. The two were without the big man, but we've got the best words in sports. It's Game 7 tonight.
And if you had asked me how you doing, handsome, my answer would have immediately been one word: nervous. Really nervous. This is hairy for me. It really is, especially with the Bruins in a Game 7 situation, having a chance to blow this series to the Maple Leafs.
If you want to get in, you always can. 802-655-6672. That's the number on both the TikTok Jewelers guest line and the Town Fair Tire text line. So Fluto Shinzawa will be joining us momentarily. And the first thing I'm going to ask him, or one of the first things I'm going to ask him, is which team has more pressure? That's going to be a major tentacle of today's discussions between you and me, because I think you can make the argument that both teams have an awful lot of pressure under them tonight.
Yeah, I would say slight pressure. I wouldn't call it an advantage. I'd say the more pressure is on the Bruins, A, because they were up 3-1 with a home game staring them in the face. You cannot have 2 out of 3 home in a best of 7 in games 5, 6, and 7 be up 3-1 and not win the series. I think the choke collar is a little bit around them right now, and I think they feel it a little bit. And the fact is they are the higher seed, and it's a home game.
All right, well, let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line, because as we said, getting ready for Game 7, joining us now is Bruins reporter, covers them for The Athletic, formerly of the Boston Globe. Fluto Shinzawa is with us. Fluto, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Well, good. As Rich said, he's nervous, and I don't know exactly where I stand. What about the team? Where do the Bruins stand right now heading into Game 7? They're saying all the right things, at least.
Well, I'm sure that they would have liked to have taken care of business earlier in the first two games, given that they had the 3-1 lead, but they didn't play good enough defense the first time in their first loss, and then they didn't finish their chances in the second loss, so here we are. Game 7, I'm sure they would have been a lot happier getting ready for Tampa Bay, but this is the spot they're in. They're saying that they're ready, that they're focused, that they're looking forward to the game. So we'll see tonight. It should be pretty evident early on which team has it, which team doesn't, or which if both teams do. So that first couple shifts, that first 10 minutes, they'll be fun to watch.
Flota, you look at the stat sheet. I mean, losses, the top line is 0 points at about a minus 20 between the three of them. Wins, they're historic numbers. Is it as simple to break down who wins this game tonight based on their performance?
Well, they've got to finish their chances. They had plenty of them in the first two periods in Game 6 that if any of those chances goes in, then perhaps it's a different outcome. So, yeah, they've got to bury their chances, but some nights it's just not going to go in for them, especially when the goalie is hot and making saves like he did. So I think in those circumstances, then you really need that secondary scoring, which is something that they've been hit or miss with. They acquired Rick Nash from the Rangers to be a good second line right wing with Krejci, and for the most part, that line's not really shown up. They were on the ice, yes, for DeBrusk's goal in Game 6 is the only goal the Bruins had, but other than that, they were very quiet. Krejci's been kind of floating around, and we haven't really seen too much of him. They had to move Nash down to the third line to get some balance in Game 6. So he'll be back with Krejci tonight, and they'll be counted on if the Bergeron line isn't, and you would assume that the Bergeron line will get its chances. If they're not finishing, then it's up to the second and third lines. Say, okay, they're going to be playing against lesser competition. They've got to start putting the puck in.
Fluto, we started the show talking about this, and it's going to be a major part of our discussion over the next 2.5 hours. Which team's under more pressure going into this game? Because I think there's an argument on both sides.
Well, certainly Boston. This is the team that had home ice advantage, that they were up 3-1. You look at just generally, given the first six games, I think the Bruins have been the better team. They're pretty much healthy for the most part, except for Brandon Carlo. I'm sure they have some guys that are banged up, but they're pretty much good to go with the lineup they have. Pressure's on them to be the ones that deliver at home. So they should be the ones that come out and set the tone.
Fluto, it's a little more difficult to detect a guy who doesn't play good defense as a guy, puts up big numbers. You can see offensive numbers right there in front of you, but I mean, is Ryan Donato struggling that much at the defensive end that all that offense he provided when he, joined the team, he doesn't play in the Game 7?
I think the thing with Ryan is that he's light on pucks, especially compared to the players that who he would possibly displace, whether that's Heinen or Wingles the other night. Right now, who else would he go in for? I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of things that go into it, but I think they look at the sum of the parts. Right now, Bruce Cassidy and his staff, they like the way the fourth line is playing with Schaller and Corrali and Achari. Those three, yes, as individuals, perhaps they don't have the same kind of finishing skill as Ryan, but together as a unit, they really like what that line can bring. And then if you keep on going up the lineup, the third line, when it's been on, that's been a very good line that can play against top lines with Riley Nash and Heinen and Backes. And they think that Heinen, the healthy scratch in Game 6, take that as motivation, learn a lesson from it, and come out with some fire. And then with the first and second lines, you're not going to touch those. So I understand why you're kind of questioning why a player with Ryan's finishing skills are in the press box. But then on the other hand, I understand why they're keeping him out and why they prefer the lineup that they have tonight. So tough call, but overall, whether Ryan is in or out, I don't think that ultimately is going to be the difference of whether they win or lose.
Fluto Shinzawa covers the Bruins for The Athletic here with us on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You said that wouldn't be the difference. What will be the difference tonight?
Well, best players have to be the best players. That means Tuukka Rask has to stop all the goals that he should. Perhaps pull back some pucks that he shouldn't. Your first line has to bury its chances. At this point, with do or die, it's just not good enough that you have chances and that you're getting good looks and good attempts. The puck has to start going in. So, and they've proven, of course, that they couldn't put the puck in. Pastrnak with his game with the 3 goals and 3 assists. It was incredible. So it's got to be more of that. You got to see more from Krejci and Rick Nash on that second line, and then the defense has to be better. They've addressed some of their shortcomings from earlier in the series in terms of not allowing Toronto to go on the attack with the stretch passes. They've cleaned up some of their 2-on-2, 3-on-3 stuff. I think the top pairing has been a bit compromised just because Charlie McAvoy just hasn't been the same since he came back from his knee injury. So that's it. It's a whole thing. It's not going to be a bit player, a third, second line guy. It's got to be your big boys, and they've got to show up.
Speaking of people, the big boys to show up, I mean, you mentioned Tuukka Rask. Are the rumblings around Boston that Tuukka's not a big-time goalie when it matters most fair?
No, I think he's okay. I don't think they have any issues with him. Is he top 5 goalie? No, probably not. Is he top 10? Yeah, I think that would be fair. Does he, just given how his $7 million contract plays compared to some of the other high-end goalies, probably overpaid, you could say that, but just given the big body of work, what he's done, how he passes the eye test on most occasions, of course, there should be some pucks that he should have stopped in this series, but I don't believe in that he's going to be an issue.
Fluto, you wrote a great story today that has interest up here regionally in the Burlington-Plattsburgh area. You wrote a story on Bruins defenseman Kevin Miller, who's a former UVM player. It was a great story. I read every word of it. Kind of give us the brief synopsis of it, and why did you decide to write this piece?
Well, Kevin's just an interesting case, like you said. Like, you look around the league, there's so many players that are first-round, second-round picks that have made it. And granted, they've worked hard along the way to get to where they are in the league, but Kevin he's fought for a place on every roster. He's a California guy, so not many people know about him. The competition out there is not as good. He had to travel to play competitively on his travel teams. So where does that leave him? It leaves him short in terms of his options for high school or junior. So his parents funded the bill for him to attend Berkshire School here in Massachusetts. He does that, and then by his senior year, he's still not getting any college offers. He stays for a PG year, and then UVM comes through. And Kevin Sneddon liked what he saw and thought he'd have something there, and he was right. So he stays for 4 years and does well, and he still doesn't have any pro offers after that. So comes to Boston on a tryout basis with the American League team, does well, eventually moves his way up, and now here he is. He's pretty much your second defenseman on the right side, and he's making $2.5 million a year, which is something, just considering how hard he's had to work and overcome just every shut door that's been in his face. So it's pretty neat to see that kind of player come through, especially one who has strong ties to New England, given what he's done in Massachusetts and Vermont in college. So, hey, not every player who is a first-round pick is going to make it. And on the other end, maybe some kids who aren't drafted coming out of college, they do make it. So credit to him, credit to his family, credit to his coaches, and he's turned himself into a pretty good NHL defenseman.
Yeah, I love the fact that he put the spotlight a little bit about how much he appreciated his time in Burlington, and we up here up in the Champlain Valley are certainly thrilled to hear that. But what did he say about his time as a Catamount?
Oh, he loved it. He couldn't get enough of it. Yeah. He said he was sold right away. He was considering Northeastern. He was considering Colorado College. He was looking at Hobart for a D3, but then he mentioned there was one weekend he came up for his visit. UVM's hosting BC at Gutterson, and he said they swept the series. And as you guys are sure, the atmosphere must have been great, and they win. And he said, hey, give me this. Give me 4 years of this. So he loved it. He loved being in school. He loved the town. I know he likes Country Card Deli there, and he gets the Shiner and on Main Street. So he's a Catamount. He's a Vermont guy. He goes up to Stowe sometimes. So that's a kid from California, and he has that kind of deep roots in Burlington, Vermont area. It's great to see.
Fluto Shinzawa covers the Bruins for The Athletic with us here on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Game 7 is tonight. Fluto, we'll get you out of here on two quick questions. So The Athletic has recently launched within the last year, and it's an outlet now that a lot of former newspaper writers are flocking to. We actually just registered for it within the last few weeks here at the station. We've been using it pretty religiously. What are you guys looking to do and accomplish at The Athletic?
Well, first of all, thank you. We're happy that you're subscribing. It's a national. It's interesting because it's national, but it's also regional and local. Like here in Boston, we cover the four pro teams for the last couple of weeks. We only launched it about 2 weeks ago, and we cover it every day. We're there every day for every practice, every game. So it's kind of like the local newspaper. But then the good part for readers and subscribers is that once you get in and follow, if say you're interested in the Bruins or whatever team it is, then you get everything. The whole bundle opens up. So there's still some spots that we haven't gotten to nationally, but for the most part, we have every team, every NHL team, basketball, football, college football, baseball. It's all there with local writers, but then also national writers. On the baseball side, you have Peter Gammons and Ken Rosenthal. NHL, you have Pierre LeBrun and Scott Burnside, which are big-time national writers who have a name for themselves and have been in this business for a long time. So it's pay, it's subscription. You have to pay. It comes out to whatever deal that we have running. A couple bucks, maybe a couple of coffees per month is what you get. But hopefully we have the space, we have the resources, we have the time to really work deeply and work on engaging pieces that hopefully our readers will enjoy, that perhaps other publications just don't have the time and space and resources for. So hopefully people get a chance to check it out. There's always some kind of deal going, whether it's free trial or playoff special or what have you. Hopefully we're doing enough of a good job that people come in and stay with us. I hope you do.
Well, we highly recommend it, and especially your in particular work, Fluto. You do a great job at inserting a lot of video into your pieces. So, you know, it strikes me as earlier in the interview, you said the Bruins are doing a great job stopping these stretch passes for the Maple Leafs. And then when I went and read that story that you wrote, there was three or four examples of the Maple Leafs converting stretch passes. So I found it really, really fascinating. So you guys are doing great work.
Thanks. Yeah, we can do it. We can do everything. Audio, video. I'm sure there'll be stuff down the road in terms of tech stuff with podcasts and perhaps some more videos. So these are stuff that your local newspaper just can't do. So hopefully people take advantage.
Fluto, we appreciate it. Enjoy Game 7.
Okay, guys. My pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes. Fluto Shinzawa covers the Bruins for The Athletic. And look, it really is a really beneficial site. Again, we subscribed to it a couple of weeks ago. And I'll be honest, now that he's off the air, I would never say this on the air, because both my parents are print journalists, I was really hesitant to kind of, you know, go all in on The Athletic just
right,
because it's taken away from a lot of the newspaper business. And look, the newspaper business has done a lot of this to itself, and I understand that. So Fluto, he worked at the Boston Globe,
yes,
and he had
forever to
leave because the way the newspaper business is changing. I didn't want to recognize that because I felt like I was cheating on 40 years worth of my parents' careers here, but it is highly recommended. It's really, really insightful stuff.
Right, and believe me, it's hard to get people away from the Globe heritage. I mean, when you're talking about hockey with Kevin Paul DuPont, and eventually Fluto came along, and he's been there forever, and the history in that place. I mean, then you just grew up with a sports page in your hand. At least I did. So it's great stuff. There's a lot of different stuff, and as you said, they put video to everything they're talking about, which you can't get anywhere else.
Big Mike at McGillicuddy's gets in. They say the two best words in sports are Game 7. Not to the losers, it isn't, though. He has great job, guys. Hashtag trust the process, meaning he's happy the Sixers won yesterday. All right, we'll come back. We'll recap the interview. We'll tell you where we are. We'll tell you what you're doing, what we're doing, and where Arnie is today as well, and why is he in L.A. All that's coming up next. The Huddle, live from the UPS store for Carmichael Street in Essex on 101.3 ESPN.
Golic and Wingo when you drive in, and The Huddle when you drive home. And you can always be part of the show by calling or texting at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. You're in The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. ESPN and 1013ESPN.com. All right, so we started the show doing something we hardly ever do, and that was starting with an interview. So thank you to Fluto Shinzawa for joining us, covers the Bruins for the Athletics. And it was a really cool story on Kevin Miller, the former UVM defenseman that he wrote. Now, do you remember watching Kevin Miller?
No, which is
really
amazing, because back then I went to almost all the games. He was just He was just a guy. And when I saw he made the pros, I thought, Kevin Miller, I had to look back and go, who was he?
Well, I love the story of kind of a self-made player. We all love the story of the guy who comes from nowhere. And not that he comes from nowhere, but as Fluto referenced, you're coming from California. You're not coming from a hockey hotbed. So your options in terms of where to play are limited. Then there was one part of the one anecdote in the story of having to drive from Southern California to play in a tournament. One weekend where the brother's in North Dakota, and one weekend where the brother's in Quebec, and one weekend where he's in San Diego, and it's just crazy. So I love the story of a self-made player who plays at a prep school, who has to take an extra year at that prep school, who gets a partial scholarship from SNED, not even a full scholarship when he first got to Burlington. So a very cool story. Game 7 is today. Now, you want my best impression of Arnie, Rich. This is it. Rich, tell everyone where we are.
Where are we? Oh, we're at the UPS store. Listen, basically, you're driving along 15 if you're coming from Five Corners. You go, take that right, just past the McDonald's, come in and take an immediate left. We're right here.
So we're at the UPS store, 4 Carmichael Street in Essex. It's your one-stop shop for small businesses. It's locally owned and operated, and they offer United States Postal Service, DHL, retail shipping rates direct from the UPS. So all kinds of stuff. They do your digital printing. They do your black and white printing, color, everything you could want. They have, and I'm really, really mad at myself, actually.
Why? Because you didn't get one of these baseball cupcakes?
I actually did get a baseball
cupcake. Oh, okay.
They're feeding us like royalty. So if you want dinner, you can come on out also to the UPS store. We're having an absolute blast. But I'm mad at myself because I told you how I ditched my men's league baseball team in Albany. It was just too much work for me to commute back to Albany.
I was surprised.
So I'm playing up here, though. I didn't give up the sport. I'm playing up here, and I'm playing for the Burlington Expos. But my team in Albany said, do you mind sending us back your jersey because we got some new guys that need the jersey?
Oh, that's tough.
It's tough. But I was like,
they didn't retire your number?
They're not going to retire my number, although I do. This is going to sound really arrogant, but I'm really hoping for a spot on the Capital District Mets Wall of Fame someday because I was a part of 3 championship teams and had a career ERA under 2.5 in that league.
And
so,
lots of beer, I assume.
This isn't a beer league. This isn't softball.
Because that's important in many cases.
Yeah, but see, that's, beer league softball is great, but I'm playing hardball.
Okay.
So, but anyways, they asked me to send back the jersey, and I said, sure. And they're like, okay, did you send it yet? And I said, on Monday, I'll send it tomorrow. When really thinking I would send it like 7 days from then. And then I was like, well, I'm going to take it to the UPS store on Wednesday. But I forgot it. So here we are at the UPS store. They've got everything that I need to ship this thing back to Albany, and I forgot it. So I'm going to have to come back and make second trip tomorrow, and maybe I'll get more leftovers.
Well, I don't. There might actually be leftovers. I've never seen so much food. Again, if you're coming home, going to Jericho, Underhill, Cambridge, wherever you're going along 15, and you want a quick bite, just pull in. We're right past, as I said, the right turn to McDonald's heading home. And we also, while you're here, we've got a ton of stuff. We did this last week, too. The Dakin Farms gift basket is up
for grabs. Raffling that off.
And a $50 gift certificate to the Essex UPS store. We've got 50 free color copies to give away and 500 free black and white copies.
So we can make 50 color copies of Arnie's face on it with the lost sign. Where is Arnie? So Arnie,
you're wanted.
Yeah, you're wanted.
But also the food donations. I want to thank that My Little Cupcake. That is going beyond the call right there.
Yeah, My Little Cupcake is across the way, and we're actually outside. So full disclosure, we were inside at the UPS store, and we decided to move it outside because it's such a beautiful day.
Yes, we waited for a nice day. It's been so awful for the last 4 days.
So it's a beautiful.
Yeah, we're giving 5 pounds of shredding.
Yes, pounds. Yes. People are talking to us in our ear, the guy who owns the place. So when he talks, you listen.
That's right. Just stop the show.
5 pounds of shredding. They'll do that for free. And last week was tax day. So remember to come on in and get all those documents shredded. Remember, Mistake of the Day is still up for grabs. It's brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms at Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. Always get in there. Now that we're a half hour in and we finally got our bearings about us, everything that else is coming up on the show today, a really good story on the Red Sox. Buster Olney is going to join us at 5 o'clock. Gronk says he's coming back, but first, Rich, the Celtics, they get the lead in the series. They hold home court.
Yep.
It wasn't always pretty, but they win by five yesterday, 3-2 lead over Milwaukee.
Well, I'll tell you, as much crap as I give Marcus Smart, you know, and you look at it and you go, well, he only had 9 points and 5 rebounds or whatever. He is an absolute difference maker down at the defensive end.
And you hate him.
Well, I've said it a million times. I hate his offensive game. I mean, remember the first two-thirds of the season before he got hurt? I'll say the first half of the season. He brings the ball up the court and just heaves up off-balance threes. They're nowhere close. And he would go 2-for-11 every single night. And while he's still doing that occasionally, I think he was, whatever he was, 2-for-9, or I don't have
2-for-9 with 5 turnovers.
Right. So, I mean, it wasn't a pretty game, but for whatever reason, and you can't put a price tag on this. Whenever he's in there, they win.
Now, the team certainly is better. Brad Stevens has said they're a better team with Marcus Smart on the floor also. And his impact was felt yesterday. I remember at 72-68, he had a scoop layup. Yep. That was a really acrobatic shot that put him up 6 instead of 4. He broke up a lob to Giannis Antetokounmpo, which was a clear dunk and a clear bucket. He broke that up. He had 3 blocks, which was more as many as the whole Milwaukee team. His presence was certainly felt yesterday. And that sometimes in a 2-2 series, just that rejuvenation of energy is big, and I think that is a big part of why it was swayed in Boston's favor last night.
And all you have heard with this team is negative as far as the injuries go. For once, there was a positive last night. I mean, Tice, gone. Kyrie, gone. Marcus Smart, gone indefinitely. Turns out it was about a month diving after the loose ball.
Well, it was so, a month and a half. Last played on March 11th.
All right, so 6 weeks or whatever it was. But, I mean, it just seems like there's been this giant cloud sort of like above us here today. Just this giant storm cloud of negativity. Like, okay, well, everybody's hurt, so they have no chance in the playoffs. And I prescribe to that as well. But for once, you had somebody coming back. And I think that really mattered last night. You could definitely hear the buzz in the crowd.
The key to the game for me, and I think Marcus Smart has a big part of this as well, is that Milwaukee just shot poorly.
Yep.
They shot really poorly, as a matter of fact. They shot 36.8% from the floor yesterday. That is their third worst field goal percentage in any game this season. Not the playoffs. 82 games plus the 6 they've played, that is the third worst field goal percentage they've had in a game. And I think Marcus Smart, he doesn't make all that difference, but he's a big part of what the Celtics do defensively.
And there was one sequence I remember late in the third quarter, over about 35, 40 seconds, where Boston just could not get the rebound. Milwaukee must have taken about 6 or 7 shots in 35 seconds. They kept getting the offensive rebound, wide open looks, and they just could not make a shot.
By the way, it's actually the second worst field goal percentage for the Bucks this season. 88 games they've played. It's their second worst field goal percentage. They also struggled from beyond the arc, hitting less than 30%. It was like around 28% from three. And another key to this game is you look at the stat sheet and you say, well, Giannis played great. He had 16 points. He had 10 boards. He had 9 assists. He was 1 assist shy of a triple-double. But for a guy,
16 points?
16 points. Well, you look at it and say triple-double is impressive. So he's 1 assist away.
Yeah.
But for a guy who was getting 30-35 at will in Boston the first two times around, he did not control the game like we have seen. And he only took 10 shots. I saw some people on Twitter call him very passive. I tend to give it more credit to the defense. They said, you're going to make other people beat us, and they just weren't able to do it consistently.
And what were we saying on the show yesterday as we previewed the game? We were saying two guys in Celtics uniforms are the absolute key here, and it was Rozier who had an game. He was okay, but he hasn't come out of his doldrums over the last 3 games after a great 23 points per game start in games 1 and 2. But also to Al Horford. And what a difference that made.
20-10 for Al Horford.
Not only 20-10, but way over. I think he had
14 rebounds.
He had 14 rebounds, 22 points, whatever it was. I mean, when do you see Al Horford getting 14 rebounds? And that was important because Milwaukee was crashing the glass, especially at the offensive end.
Well, very impressive what the Celtics did. It wasn't always pretty at time. I'm giving a lot of credit to Brad Stevens as well. We didn't even talk about him starting Semi Ojeleye for the first time in his career. But you win a game where Rozier doesn't get 15. You win a game where Tatum doesn't get 10. And you win a game where Brown doesn't get 15. You're not expecting to win. I'm putting a lot of credit for Brad Stevens also.
Doesn't it, though, feel like they're going to go to Milwaukee tomorrow and not win? Doesn't this just feel like it's going 7?
I'm here for it. I'm here for Game 7 in their situation. And now in the Bruins situation, I'm not necessarily here for Game 7 because you had a 3-1 lead.
Right.
That feels like a collapse. Game 7 in Celtics-Bucks feels like a treat because we, you know, not, I don't know that anybody really had the Celtics losing, but we knew it wasn't going to be easy. So I had the expectation that this thing was going deep into the series.
I don't know how to feel. Do I want them to lose tomorrow so that, and then win the seventh game so that I finally get a prediction right? Or do, you know what? No. Just go out to Milwaukee and win. But I just, I don't know. It just doesn't feel to me like they're going to go to Milwaukee and win that game tomorrow. But they obviously could win game seven, and we certainly hope they do.
Again, you're in the huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Brady here. Rich is here. We're live at the UPS store here at 4 Carmichael Street in Essex. Arnie's gone. He's in L.A. taking care of some family stuff. He'll join the show for the next 2 weeks starting tomorrow. He's just doing a travel day today, so he'll be back tomorrow in his honor. I will congratulate Juniors Downtown and our friend Amir on winning the Burlington YMCA title yesterday.
Oh, there you go.
72-71. Trimboli had 45 in a losing effort.
45 of 71?
Yeah, so he had 45 in a losing effort. Oh. Brian from Richmond says, Semio! He's excited about Semi-Ojeleye getting the start as well, his first start ever. All right, when we come back, David Ortiz wanted out of Boston at one point. What is that story all about? We'll tell you next on 101.3 ESPN.
Rich, Arnie, and Brady are back, and they're already starting to argue. The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
The Huddle, everybody. It's 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. Brady and Rich here live at the UPS store for Carmichael Street in Essex. And Rich, you had three or four more pieces of pizza in that break.
Well, it's Mimo's. It's right there. I mean, the location we're in, if you probably are familiar with Carmichael Street.
This is like the Essex Plaza.
Yeah, and it's, we're just surrounded by restaurants.
Yeah.
So, and every one of them has come on board today. So look, if you're coming home and you want a quick bite to eat, this is the place to be. We've got food donations for My Little Cupcake. We really appreciate the extra yard they went with the football cupcakes and the baseball ones. And, of course, our buddies, I've been there once or twice in my life, Cody's Irish Pub,
yeah,
which is about 100 feet to my left, has contributed all kinds of, what are those, boneless wings?
Boneless wings. So we'll go and have a celebratory beer after the show. Yeah. Glennon Monkton agrees with you. He goes, I agree with Rich. Marcus Smart throws his body around with no regard for his body, and his defense causes the opposition to bleed the clock and force shots. I talked good about his defense, too. You've been on the one hammering on Marcus Smart all year. Why do you get the praise from Glennon Monkton?
Just because I'll say it for the 400th time. The only thing I complained about with them was the shooting. That's it.
You want him back? He's a restricted free agent.
Absolutely, I want him back. He's a guy, and I'll say it for the third time today, they win when he plays. And that, what else matters?
He's a restricted free agent at the end of the year. That's going to be one of the Celtics' biggest offseason storylines.
Right. And they're obviously, I mean, they've got three guys, basically. I mean, the Horford contract isn't, you know, I mean, they're stuck with a couple of mega contracts.
Well, Horford, so, Kyrie, and Hayward, they're not going anywhere.
Right. And so that's the thing. So Smart is going to, I mean, is he going to want to take a hometown discount? What's going to want to do?
Well,
here,
it's a restricted free agency, meaning that other teams can offer him whatever they want, and then the Celtics have to match. So,
oh, I see. Okay.
There is no hometown discount. There is no hometown discount. There is, if a really bad Phoenix team wants to offer him $100 million, the Celtics have to match it or he's gone.
Bye-bye.
So that's how that would go.
Now, I mean, I'm sure he loves sunshine and all, but if you're Marcus Smart, do you really jump off this train when it's just starting to get going and
go to
Phoenix?
He fits well in Boston. He fits well with what Brad Stevens wants to do, and his role allows him, you know, the role of the scorers on this team allow him to be really good in his role as a guy who, look, he may get you 18 a couple of nights. He may get you 24 one night, but he might also give you 6. He might give you 7,
zero,
and 4, and 0. And that's okay when you have other offensive pieces. You know, it's funny, from a guy who we don't know if he wants to leave Boston to a guy who did want to leave Boston at one point. How about the story Theo Epstein told yesterday about David Ortiz? He came and his agent asked for a trade back in the early part of 2003. And Theo Epstein was on a show, a podcast they have called Executive Access yesterday. And this is where he told the story. So Aaron, back in the studio, let us hear from the former Sox GM.
David Ortiz hit, I think, all of 2 home runs the first half of the 2003 season. And in mid-May, had his agent come and ask me for a trade somewhere where he could play more regularly. Fernando Cuza came to talk to me. And I told Cuza at the time that, you know, David was someone we wanted to get every day at bats, but we just needed to you know, pare down the roster a little bit. So we ended up trading Hillenbrand instead of David Ortiz, which I guess that was a good decision in hindsight. And David got regular playing time, ended up hitting, I think, close to 30 homers in the second half of the season, and was off and running as Big Poppy.
I mean, how crazy is that? David Ortiz, midway through, and then not midway, but early part 2003, he's benched at this point. It's hard to remember that. He did play 130 games that season, but it didn't come early for him in that year.
Oh, I remember it vividly, because you couldn't possibly have played worse, hit worse than he did. He absolutely could not hit the ball.
Well, if you remember that Red Sox team, there were four guys for three spots at that point. So you had Bill Miller, who was kind of entrenched at third base. You had Kevin Millar, who was entrenched at first base. And then he had Shea Hillenbrand, who had been an all-star in his second year, who could play both. And then he had Ortiz, who at that point in his career could play a little first base, but was always going to be better suited to be a DH. So you had four guys for three spots. And in Ortiz's cases, he was only ever going to be around at DH or first base. So can you imagine if this team had kept Shea Hillenbrand and dealt David Ortiz as he asked?
I'm trying to think. I think, did he go to Arizona and then he went to Toronto? All right,
Hillenbrand.
I might be wrong.
Yes, they traded him to Arizona for Byung-Young Kim.
Oh, okay. Is that what it was? All right. Amazing when I don't have a laptop in front of me, how little I can remember. But I do. Well, actually, I got that one right.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, Shea Hillenbrand, was a decent hitter. But
he was an all-star in his second year.
Yeah, but there must have been a shortage at third base of all-stars. I mean, Scott Cooper was an all-star for the Red Sox way back when.
Shea Hillenbrand reminds me of there's three players that I always lump together, and Shea Hillenbrand kind of falls into that. Jeff Cirillo, Mark Loretta, and Rich Aurelia, I think of as the same player. Those three players, now we're going back into the late 90s and early 2000s, but those three I think of as the same, and Shea Hillenbrand kind of falls into that group as well.
He might have had the least amount of personality I've ever seen in a baseball player. Remember the interviews with him? Everything was just,
You know what's crazy is I met Hillenbrand and his family.
Was he a decent guy?
He was a really good guy.
Go figure.
And his family was great. So I've told this story before. I was the bullpen catcher at the Cooperstown Hall of Fame Classic, and they do that every week, every year over Memorial Day weekend. And so, you know, they tell you that they don't hobnob with the players too much, but this was way before the game. This was actually in the hotel at breakfast, and Shea Hillenbrand and his family are checking into the hotel, and they go to breakfast, and they're right next to me, and Shea actually came up to me and introduced himself. No, he could not have been nicer in that 5 minutes that we spoke, but no, he was great. His family was great. And I think about this, about Ortiz. You know, the thing I forget about the Ortiz narrative is that I was always under the impression that they kind of just picked him up off the scrap heap from Minnesota.
Right.
He had 20 homers the year before he was in Boston, and he was steadily ascending. He was like 10, 16, 20. So I was under the impression he was this 137 hitter that the Red Sox just discovered. He had been okay prior to Boston.
He became a 137 hitter for the first half of that year, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if he was hitting 137, striking literally every single at bat. So, yeah, I mean, boy, hindsight is 20/20, and never more so than in a situation like that. Imagine the trail that he would have left. I mean, if he had gone, what if he'd gone to New York?
And just imagine, it's hard to play that game, what if he had gone to this place, but all I can think about is, what if he wasn't in Boston? And what happens if David Ortiz does successfully get Theo Epstein to trade him? I don't know what becomes of whatever franchise he went to. But I don't know if we're sitting here saying the Red Sox have won, what, three World Series since 2004?
All with him, yeah.
I think there's a – I mean, you're talking about the face of a franchise for a decade, and I think that's fair to say. I think he was the face of the franchise from 2004 until 2017.
Absolutely.
So other guys had good runs. Pedro had a good run, and Nomar had a good run prior to that. But David Ortiz, for 13, 14 years, he was the guy.
Well, yeah, you talk about Nomar and Pedro. I mean, he had a lot of help along the way, but it was help
and
in short spurt. Well, Manny, absolutely. But, I mean, Poppy was the one that was always there through the championships. Yeah. Once he arrived, they started getting really good, and they were in the conversation for many years. Obviously, they had a couple of last-place finishes towards the end there under John Farrell. But for the most part, they were always in the conversation for a championship.
Red Sox played yesterday. They lose game one of that series to the Blue Jays, losing 4-3. Do you walk away from that game encouraged or discouraged? I know it's easy to look at it and say they lost, that's bad.
Yeah.
But when you look at what they did, Porcello pitches well again. They get to an all-star closer in Ozuna late. How do you look at that loss?
Well, I look at it as a tough break because Porcello, as you said, I think he only gave up three hits over seven innings.
Yeah.
And you know, the first run scores on a dribbler down the third baseline to Devers, and he makes it. I mean, he would have scored anyway, but he decided to go home went home with it and threw wide. Second two runs, the second and the third run score on a hard hit ball that he probably should have made a play on. A nice play, but he probably should have. And the problem right now with this team, and this happens to every team in baseball, even what was a 17-2 offensive dominating team, the Boston Red Sox, 3 days ago out west, you're just going to hit these skids every now and then. And when they got down 3-0 last night, I said, that's it. And you look at guys like Benintendi and J.D. Martinez going 0-for-8 with 7 strikeouts between them last night. And Benintendi with a golden sombrero, and I have no idea why he was still in there against Jay Happ. I mean, it was like watching a high school kid against a major leaguer. So, and the other thing that I thought was weird last night that did bother me is they continue to bring Kimbrel in to tie games. And I understand. I know Arnie would flip out if he heard that.
Well, you generally use your closer in the ninth inning on the road because you know you're – well, I take that back. You generally use him at home. Because you know you're not going to have a save opportunity in extra innings. So, yes, that does strike me as a little odd.
I have no problem with most closers pitching at odd times when it isn't a close, when it isn't a save opportunity. But Craig Kimbrel, for whatever reason, look at the numbers, has never been nearly as effective when the game isn't on the line, i.e. a save opportunity, and they continue to throw him in there, and he continues to be mediocre in that scenario.
The other thing that I wanted to come in here today and rip, I want to say it's Carlos Fables, the third base coach, for sending.
He's been doing it all year.
Well, they're trying to be aggressive on the bases,
and
they get Nunez thrown out by a mile. So reset the situation real quick. Bases are loaded, two outs in the ninth. Brock Holt hits a single to the left. One run comes in, ties the game at three, and then Nunez gets thrown out by the distance between Toronto and Montreal, practically.
Yes.
So he gets thrown out. I wanted to rip Fables, especially because Mookie Betts is on deck.
Absolutely.
You've got the bases loaded.
Yep.
With Betts, your best hitter up.
And two outs, which is an important part of this.
Two outs against a closer who's now thrown 30-plus pitches. But I just think if you're trying to send a message that we're trying to be aggressive, and Curtis Granderson is a guy that people are known to run on, I think that's a move you got to make. It didn't work out. But I think it's a move you got to make.
I'm a little nervous about Fables. I mean, we've seen this 3 or 4 times already this season. What are we, 20 games into the season?
Yeah, we are live at the UPS store here for Carmichael Street in Essex. People getting in on the TikTok Jewelers guest line right now. Chris, the Mets fan, takes a shot at you, Rich.
All right.
He says, Shea Hillenbrand is a great guy. He actually does a lot of work with underprivileged kids in Arizona now by providing them with baseball gloves and uniforms, bats, etc. Think you can find his foundation online. I donate every year.
I'm intimidated by people that never smile.
So,
and that guy, when he was being interviewed, never cracked a smile about anything.
Glenn in Moncton says, I think as Sox fans, without Big Poppy, we'd be saying 1918, so still be waiting. Big Poppy got Pedro to come to Boston. And then Tristan in Williston, you can't send the runner with two outs of the ninth with Betts coming up with the bases loaded. Nunez was out by a mile.
I agree.
It's something, hindsight, I could talk myself into also, but I think in the moment, I might have taken the shot at it too. You're trying to give yourself a chance.
But Holt hits a one-hop shot into the outfield. I mean, I couldn't believe it when he sent him. You knew he was going to be out, even if the throw came in on 5 hops.
Yeah, but Granderson's a guy that everybody runs on. Cora even said after the game, he took a shot, he said, we've been running on him for 5 years. They said that's how little they think of Granderson's arm.
If that's going to go on all summer, it's going to get frustrating with Fables.
Curtis Granderson is not always going to be the left fielder. We're live at the UPS store. We'll tell you what we're doing next on the Huddle 103 ESPN.
Arnie injured himself playing basketball.
Ouch!
Again. How is it that he never sprains his mouth? This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Arnie's gone. He's in Los Angeles, so no worry about him. Well, he's going to play basketball out there, too, so maybe he'll get hurt again doing that. We are live at the UPS store for Carmichael Street in Essex right here. Brady and Rich, and now sitting down with the guy who owns the place who's treated us like royalty today. Earl, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for introducing me.
You're a big sports fan, I heard.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. Back in the 50s, my mom used to take me to Fenway Park to watch the Red Sox.
Okay.
That was... back when it cost $2 for a ticket.
It still looked the same, though, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they've added a little bit to it. It's you know, I've been an avid Boston fan for years. The Bruins, the Celtics, the Patriots are, you know, I follow them religiously. And I just wanted to mention a few things. You guys are doing a great job. I appreciate
Thank you.
You guys being here.
And thanks for having us.
Well, we have a lot of stuff to give away today, and we'd love to, for you to come by. You don't have to eat dinner. You can eat dinner here.
Yeah, right. They've got pizza. They've got wings. They've got vegetables. So if anyone's telling you you need to eat healthy all the time, you can do that here too. So they got everything for you.
Yep. Plus, we have some giveaways. And if you have old tax papers you want to get rid of, we're doing free shredding up to 5 pounds. So
yeah.
If you want to bring those with you, we could do that as well.
Cool.
Just so you know, this UPS store here, obviously being UPS, we're shippers. We're also packers. But we do a tremendous amount of printing. And we can do just about any kind of printing that you possibly can imagine. So you ought to come by here. We have a lot of people in Essex doing printing with us. We're affiliated with the Essex Rotary Club, and those guys use us for almost everything.
Oh, well, you should use them, too. Again, I'll have to come back tomorrow and bring that baseball jersey that I forgot to ship back to Albany. So, Earl, again, they're giving away a bunch of stuff. Dakin Farms, the gift basket. They're also doing 50 free color prints, 500 black and white prints, so all kinds of stuff. So,
cool.
Earl, we appreciate it, and good luck to your Bruins in Game 7.
Yeah. I got my fingers crossed.
There you go. And all of New England does, too. Buster Olney's coming up next, 101.3 ESPN.
The local slant on all things sports.
We know that everybody's going to be gunning for us.
It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back. You're in the huddle right here. Arnie Liss on 101.3 ESPN, 103ESPN.com. When the cat's away, the mice play. As
yes.
Arnie will tell you, he's my boss, so I get to hang out.
Yeah. In his mind,
he's my
Actually,
boss.
Actually, you're the cat,
well,
and
you
we're
know,
the mice.
You know what this means? This means we get to ask intelligent questions when we talk to Buster Olney on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. So Buster is with us now. Buster, how are you?
Coming in.
Maybe Buster's. Oh, there we go. Buster, how are you?
I'm doing well, but it does sound like we got a long delay. I hope, I think we'll be okay.
Well,
so this is 2 weeks in a row. Last week it was feedback, so this week it's a delay.
Well, we're on location, Buster.
There you go.
So, Buster, Red Sox lose yesterday, but I'm encouraged because Rick Porcello continues to pitch well. How vital is he to this team's success moving forward?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. And in fact, if you look at the Red Sox and their potential advantages over the Yankees, I think it could be the rotation. You know, between Sale and David Price and Rick Porcello, you know, that could be their advantage. I do think that as the summer goes along, the Yankees bullpen, they'll figure that out, and they'll go out and I think add before the trade deadline. But the rotation for the Yankees, I think, is always kind of going to be iffy because you know, they've got, you know, guys like CeCe Sabathia threw great last night, but you never know how his front knee's going to hold up. Masahiro Tanaka, with the elbow thing that he's had in the past, he tends to go up and down. They're probably not going to be that many good starting pitchers available in the trade market this summer. So, yeah, 100%, I think Porcello, Sale, Price, as far as they go, is how far the Red Sox are going to go.
Buster, we've got kind of a market correction over the last couple of days. The Red Sox obviously not going to keep a 17-2 pace, and the Yankees are eventually going to start hitting like crazy, and that has happened over the last 3 or 4 days. Where does Toronto fit into all this? They're hanging around.
They are an absolutely intriguing team that could be a wrench for either the Yankees or the Red Sox. Because on any given day, you know, when they throw out an Aaron Sanchez or a Marcus Stroman or a Jay Happ, you know, three good starting pitchers, they can beat these teams. And I, you know, talked to scouts at the end of spring training who talked about the Blue Jays, like, you know what? They're going to be better. Like, they're going to be an interesting team so long as they stay healthy. Now, they do have an interesting decision to make before the July 31st trade deadline with their all-star short or third baseman Josh Donaldson. We don't know whether or not they're going to keep him throughout the summer, but I think without a doubt they're kind of going to be the X factor in the American League East division. When you look at the Orioles and their issues, and when you look at the Tampa Bay Rays, those are two teams that are not going to be. I think they're going to impact the Yankees and the Red Sox, but absolutely, I think the Blue Jays can.
Buster, what are people in baseball saying about Hanley Ramirez? Because people didn't know what to make of him. Tom Karen of Nesson told us he thought he was going to become like Pablo Sandoval and get DFA'd at midseason, and here he is at the top of the leaderboard practically in RBI for the American League.
Yeah, and it was interesting because when I went down to Puerto Rico in Thanksgiving and I saw Alex Cora there, and we talked about the team and he talked about the lineup and we were just kind of kicking things around, and he said, I think Hanley's going to have a real bounce-back season. When I talked to David Ortiz, he said the same thing. I think with Hanley, there's always a question of, you know, how invested is he going to be and how... You know, how much is he going to devote to his work on a daily basis? And from the beginning of the winter, that's what I just kept on hearing, that people thought that he was going to be all in this year. Even after they signed Mitch Moreland, even after they signed J.D. Martinez, they thought that he was going to be someone who was going to be part of the solution. And, you know, the fact that I think Alex understood how much of an X factor he could be for the lineup when he announced early on that Hanley was going to be one of the guys hitting near the top of the order. I think he wanted to make sure to keep Hanley engaged because they got 1 year left on that contract and they might as well try to make the best of it.
Buster Olney, our ESPN MLB insider, with us here on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Buster, we've talked a lot about the Red Sox new offensive approach. They're going to try to hit fastballs. They're going to try to hit early in the count, and I'm all for it. Well, we saw Sean Manaea use that against them in that no-hitter by throwing a lot of first-pitch changeups and a lot of junk. Are teams going to start to adjust their pitching philosophy here and start throwing the Red Sox just a lot of pitches?
100%. And that's the, you know, those are the ebbs and flows that go on with all players and all teams during the course of the year. And, you know, those conversations for the Red Sox started back in January when Alex was meeting with individual players with Mookie Betts on January 4th, and they talked about it, adopting that approach, and that's an approach that worked well for the Houston Astros last year. You know, the Astros last year were last in the American League and last in baseball in strikeouts, and that's where the Red Sox were. But, yeah, it's absolutely a natural evolution, and now it's going to be the challenge of the Red Sox hitters to react to pitches with the idea in the back of their mind, you know what, I may not necessarily get a cookie fastball in the first or second pitch.
Over the Yankees, I mean, you talked about Tanaka and Sabathia and injury concern for the rotation, but do you feel like now they put some wins together, I think they're three games over and they're hitting like crazy, it may be a market correction here and they are on their way?
I do, and I think a lot of it obviously is related to how comfortable Stanton's become. And you can see him slowly just settling in and getting hits and having better at-bats and just relaxing more and more. And then the depth in the lineup really manifesting itself. And it's been remarkable to see the improvement in Didi Gregorius. You know, we've been talking about, you know, the great adjustment made by Mookie Betts about being aggressive earlier in the count. Well, the fact that Didi Gregorius is playing with patience and you know, being willing to take a walk, and we're seeing that his ratio of walks to strikeouts increased by a factor of four, that's unheard of. Like, you do not see hitters, if you're aggressive at age 21, 22, and you swing at a lot of pitches the way Didi did early in his career, you don't see those guys change that much as they get older. And so to see him early on, you know, take pitches and draw walks and put himself in a better situation and take advantage of the dimensions in Yankee Stadium, he certainly becomes a force that I don't think anybody anticipated, including the Yankees. But now you got Judge rolling, you know, and he's got an on-base percentage close to .480, and Stanton and Didi hitting as well as he is, and Sanchez now starting to get going. They do look like they'll be able to hit past a lot of the potential weaknesses they have in their rotation during the course of the summer.
Buster, I continue to be impressed by Brian Cashman and what he has done. This usually you see a team go all in and overpay on free agents, or you see a team tear it all down and get real young and get real bad. He has done a little bit of both. He's gone all in on the big Stanton trade, but he's also put together a younger, more athletic roster. How has he done it? Because he's got this team positioned well for now and the future.
He did that by convincing the ownership that they needed to go in that direction, because the Yankees, you know, back in 2012, 2013, it was a very top-heavy roster. It was an old roster. You know, for years, Brian advised George Steinbrenner in George's last year as owner of the team, look, we need to get younger. We need to focus on the farm system. And they did a little bit of that in that, you know, time period when they promoted guys like Robinson Cano and Phil Hughes and Melky Cabrera, but then it got away from it, and you know that sort of thing's becomes like a drug addiction, where you know you're kind of like, wow, you know, I need the quick fix of a free agent to help our lineup now, and yes, we're willing to overpay, but you don't really solve the real problem, which is to get the flow of talent from the minor leagues right. They've made some adjustments with their scouting department. They've done a great job identifying players like Aaron Judge. And in the summer of 2016, Brian convinced Hal Steinbrenner, look, well, the Yankees never do sell downs, but this is the perfect time to sell down on Andrew Miller, on Aroldis Chapman, to bolster our farm system and put ourselves in a better position moving forward. And man, that's not something you see. And, in fact, I cited them this week. I wrote a piece saying the Giants should consider the trade of Madison Bumgarner, and Giants fans are going crazy and saying, you know, if you're a team that has a lot of money like the Giants, you shouldn't do that. And my response has been on Twitter, well, the Yankees did it. They managed to make a really smart decision about selling off, and it's worked well for them.
I'll say. Hey, what did you make of the Derek Jeter-Brian Gumbel conversation on Real Sports the other day?
Well, first off, when, you know, Derek had that exchange with him in which he talked about when Brian Gumbel asked him about tanking, and Derek said through his smile that, you know, that says to me you're mentally weak. I can't wait to get you on the golf course. And there were a lot of headlines that said, you know, tense exchange, controversial exchange between Derek and Brian Gumbel. I've known Derek for a long time. He was kidding. And Brian Gumbel knew he was kidding. And Brian Gumbel laughed at that comment. That said, Derek's answer was ridiculous. That he basically maintaining that the Marlins, he expects them to win, you know, call me delusional, he expects them to contend. They cut their payroll by $50 million. They traded four of their five best players. And one thing I hear of a lot from folks with other teams is, and Derek's peers in front offices, they feel like that he struggles with stuff that could be really easy, whether it was the communication was in Carlos Stanton, you know, the handling of the firing of Andre Dawson and Tony Perez, the decision not to go to the winter meetings, and then this, not being able to smoothly pivot off what probably was a really simple question to answer about tanking, because you don't have to say that you're trying to contend when everyone knows you're not. But what you can say, especially with the Sixers doing so well, hey, we've got the process. We're trying to get our payroll more in a manageable place. We believe in our young players. But to sit there and say that you just traded all these players and expect your team to contend, it just sounds silly.
Buster, we'll get you out of here on this. I'm all in on prospects. So tell us about Ronald Acuna, the kid for the Braves, who's like the number one prospect in baseball, who makes his major league debut tonight. Tell us that this kid is the next coming of somebody great.
Yeah, well, I know this. Ralph Garr, who played with Hank Aaron, was in the Braves spring training this year, and he told reporters that Ronald Acuna reminds him of Hank Aaron, okay? And he was not saying
wow.
That he's going to hit 755 home runs, but when you have a teammate of Hank Aaron telling you that's the sort of talent he has, it really jumps out at you. I saw him in spring training, and I was having a conversation actually with the manager of the team, and I wasn't looking at who was in the cage, and I heard this sound. It was like, what was that sound? And I looked, and there's Acuna taking batting practice, and then he came up for his first plate appearance. He hits a ground ball to shortstop, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, that's an easy out. And he beats a throw easily with a sort of speed that's breathtaking. He's a five-tool player. Wow. A lot of times when these guys are labeled as the number one prospect, they don't turn out to be as great as a Trout or a Harper. I think this guy has a chance to be that good. And my son, who's a Braves fan, he's 13 years old. I got him up and going and getting ready for school this morning by being able to tell him, guess what? Acuna's reaching the big leagues tonight.
Well, good news for him. Good news for the Red Sox. They get a chance to snap their three-game losing skid tonight against the Jays. Buster Olney, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
That sounds great, guys. Take care.
All right, Buster. There he goes, Buster Olney. Rich, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll break, and then we'll come back. We'll tell you where we are, and we'll get into some NFL notes because we are on draft day eve.
Yes.
101.3 ESPN. We'll be right back.
If you think what Arnie says on the show is irritating, you should hear him during the commercial break. It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Let's go!
All right, everybody, welcome back. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and we're always on the 101.3 ESPN app as well. We are live for Carmichael Street in Essex. We are out at the UPS store, Rich.
And I didn't hear one horrible thing out of Arnie during the commercial break. Not a word.
That's because Arnie's gone. Arnie's in La La Land. Do you think he's doing any of the things he says he does there, like at nude beaches or... hanging out with supermodels.
Right, Speedo at Venice Beach, at Muscle Beach, at Venice. I mean, Lord help us, no.
I wouldn't know, Arnie, if you came up to me at the Olive Garden and asked for more breadsticks. That's how I feel about
it. At least in a Speedo.
So, I don't want to think about that. Arnie's in L.A. taking care of some family stuff. He'll be there the next 2 weeks. He'll join the show every day but today. He's on a travel day. So we're live, again, for Carmichael Street in Essex. We're out at the UPS store. And this has been a fun day. Yeah. This has been a really fun day. And they got a lot of great stuff going on here as well. It's locally owned and operated. It's your one-stop shop for small businesses. They'll take care of your color printing needs. They'll take care of your black and white printing needs. And, Rich, we're giving away a bunch of stuff, too.
Yeah, we are. And that's what I love about these little mini malls. They all get along so well that they just bring things to each other when they have an event going.
Like yeah, we've got food from everywhere.
Everywhere. We had food donations for My Little Cupcake, and I want to give them a shout-out because they went the extra mile. They actually have baseball and football cupcakes complete with stitches on the ball. And all. They went crazy.
When are we going to get Ray and Brady cut?
What would that look like?
There'd be a picture of Arnie on one, a picture of you on one, and a picture of me on one.
Well, that's kind of frightening. But also our buddies at Cody's Irish Pub, which I've been once or twice this week, about 100 feet to the left, and that's probably where I'll end up for Game 7 tonight. I need to be somewhere loud, I'll tell you that, because I'm going to be a lunatic tonight, especially if the Bruins get behind. Mimo's Pizza brought tons of pizza, thanks to them. They're right across the way. And the folks at Dunkin' Donuts brought enough donuts for an army.
So we've got everything here, so if you don't want to go somewhere for dinner, you can come here for dinner. So this is the spot to be. And so we're also giving away the Dakin Farms prize pack as well. We're giving away that. They'll also, here at the UPS store, give away some free color printing options, some free 500 free black and white copies. So whatever you need, you can get it done here, Rich.
And everybody's standing in front of us watching us talk. I always find that interesting. Are we as exciting as you were hoping we would be?
That's because Arnie's. If Arnie were here right now, Arnie would be hand gesturing while on the air, and he'd be talking like this. And oh, Rich, we got people here. Give him a T-shirt. He'd be fumbling down under the table and all this stuff. I'm like, Arnie, you can wait to break
right.
to do this stuff.
I'll tell you one thing we can provide them is a lot of food.
Yes.
It's in there. But you mentioned the raffle for Dakin Farms gift basket. Also a $50 gift certificate to Essex UPS store, which is right where we are, of course. 50 free color copies, 500 free black and white copies as well. So lots of stuff.
And, Rich, you're being challenged.
Oh, great. At what?
On the Town Fair Tire text line.
Chris, hopefully it involves beer or food.
No, it actually involves something you said earlier.
Uh-oh.
So you said that you didn't like Shea Hillenbrand because you thought he was a bad guy?
Well, no, I didn't say he was a bad guy.
You thought he wasn't very...
He had any personality. He was just like, well, to me, it was like John Lester. He just stood there, yeah, thanks.
Chris, the Mets fan, is friends with Shea Hillenbrand.
Uh-oh, now I've done it. And he's probably calling Shea right now.
He's already done it. He's offering to come on the show at some point. So
no.
You're going to have to defend yourself against former MLB All-Star Shea Hillenbrand.
Geez, the one time I have a strong opinion about something, and look what happens.
So, Chris, the Mets fan, you can help us set that up and tell tell us how you know Shea Hillenbrand.
Okay, and I'm going to show you an old video of a Shea Hillenbrand interview. And he's not the most exciting guy ever in the history of media.
I'm also going to go back to my one memory of Shea Hillenbrand of when I met him and his wife and his kids, and the whole family was nothing but jovial.
All right, well,
so
I
bottom
think I'm
line
pay
is
for that one.
Bottom line is you're going to be in bad with Shea Hillenbrand.
Okay.
Since he and I have already met, I'm in good.
Okay. I'll just tell him right out front. I didn't say he was a bad guy. I said he wasn't an interesting interview.
Unnamed texter says, Rich, have faith. We will be fine tonight, meaning the Bruins. NFL,
really?
By the way, you can also get in on the Town Fair Tire text line with the mistake of the day if you want that 101.3 ESPN baseball cap brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester. Rich, the NFL draft is tomorrow, and it finally, look, I love the draft.
Yes.
I love draft day. I love draft weekend. And I love a lot of the speculation leading up to the draft. What I don't love is the last 2 weeks of the disinformation and the, is this really a smear campaign? Are we just trying to get interest away from a guy so that we can draft him? The last 2 weeks of draft week I don't love. But the draft is coming up tomorrow, and the Patriots have gotten a little more clarity perhaps about their draft strategy because they know that Rob Gronkowski is now officially coming back.
Well, that's, I think, one of the reasons why it came out today. It had to come out at some point. Well, it didn't have to, but I think it's good of him to do that.
Do you think the Patriots, Dan Patrick was talking about this earlier, do you think the Patriots gave Gronk a hard and fast deadline? Tell us before the draft or we're getting rid of you. Do you think this came from the Patriots that he had to have this answer now?
Boy, that sounds drastic to me. That's even drastic by Patriots terms. I would say no to that. I don't think they went quite that far, but I'm sure they said we'd really appreciate an answer, and we'd appreciate it before Thursday, because it does. It completely changes their strategy tomorrow. If he's in there, I mean, do you waste a first-round pick on a tight end? Hell no.
I don't think that this came from the Patriots. I don't think it's that cynical. I think what this is I think Gronk understands the backlash that has come from his little Monster Energy,
yes,
I can vroom vroom press conference the other day. I think Gronk knows now that for really maybe one of the first times he's been put in a negative light, yep, among Patriot fans. And I think the quickest way to reconcile with the fan base that maybe is growing a little sick of you at times and in some certain facets, I think the quickest thing is to come out and put a lot of the speculation to rest.
I think it's a little bit in a much smaller way, like Belichick holding Butler out of it. And Belichick couldn't care less what one human being thinks, except maybe his girlfriend and his kid. But other than that, I'm sure he doesn't care. But my point being, when he held Butler out, that was sort of drawing the line. You know, to me it was, and I know a lot of the people I've talked to said it was as well. And it was just, it got to the point where it's like, okay, that's too much. That's too much. And so, what?
Listeners are bringing us gifts.
A Nomar.
I have to tell you, what is your name, sir? Pat, I'm going to tell this story in front of Pat. Pat just is a listener of ours, clearly, that just brought us some memorabilia.
Wow.
So Pat brought us starting lineups. And starting lineups are something that I bet you anyone over the age of 28 probably knows very well. And anyone under the age of 28 might not have a huge understanding of what starting lineups are. Starting lineups at one point were maybe going to become like Beanie Babies, where they were going to come super collectible, and they're these small action figures, and they had them for a bunch of different sports, and they had them. Some of them are incredibly valuable, and some of them are worth nothing. But I am, so you got a Nomar Garciaparra one.
Nomar!
And I got a Ken Griffey one.
Yep.
And Pat, I'm going to tell you this. I love starting lineups so much that in my office, I have 6 mint in-box Ken Griffey starting lineups on my wall as decoration. Now, you have brought me another Griffey, which I appreciate.
You're not supposed to tell him that you already have 6.
Yeah, but I don't have this one.
Oh, it's a different position?
Him diving. Or this is actually him reaching up. I'm sorry.
I didn't know they were in different.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So a lot of players have multiple starting lineups. And I love starting lineups so much that I bought probably 100 of them when I was younger. And I would play with him, and I beat him to hell. And my Chris Dolman, the former defensive lineman, yep, for the Vikings. He's missing an arm. And Neil Smith for the Chiefs and Broncos, he's missing an arm because I just played with them so much. And, you know, they start to lose their numbers over time. And I used to wrap up aluminum foil and make baseballs out of them, and they would just hit the ball all over the – so it was crazy. On my 18th birthday, my mom gave me 2 boxes – and there are 2 boxes of every starting lineup I ever had now mint in box. So I have all the ones that I beat to hell, and then I have every starting lineup I ever had in a box, mint condition now. So that was one of my 18th birthday gifts that she gave me. So Pat has contributed to my collectible obsession here and my Griffey obsession by giving me a Griffey starting
lineup.
This
is great. Now I have seven things in my house that I have to move instead of only six.
Oh, he's got Gary Carter for Arnie. Arnie doesn't deserve presents.
No, he just...
Yes, he does like the Mets. So, Pat, we appreciate gift. We appreciate the support. Wow. And I appreciate any chance to talk about starting lineups. Hats, starting lineups, and bobbleheads, Rich. Those are my three big collectible obsessions.
Now go eat.
So, do you have any... I know you don't now, but when you were younger, did you have collectible obsessions? Were there things you were into?
Just baseball cards. And by thousands.
I have thousands of those as well. Yep. You want to hear how OCD I am about my baseball cards? Do you really want to know?
What did you do, laminate them all?
They're not laminated, so I have... I mean, I have three full binders of the ones that I've considered to be binder worthy.
You're immediately obsessed when you're binding them.
Yes, they're binding.
Bindering
they're,
them.
They have, yeah, what is the word?
I don't know.
They are in binders, and I have to consider them binder worthy. If not, they're in boxes and things like that. My baseball cards are all in alphabetical order. So
Don Ossie and Henry Aaron and...
Anytime I get a new baseball card that I consider binder worthy, I then have to move every single card.
That's wrong.
Getting one new pack of baseball cards requires one full day's worth of energy. And then if you happen to be wrong and miscalculate in some way anything, like if I decide in a pack of 12 I get six binder worthy cards when I've only opened up five slots, and then we've got to do the whole thing over again.
It's a little bit like my CD buying. You know, I have them, and you don't have any room for any of them, so you have to decide which one to toss when you get that new album.
So,
well, that's serious OCD right there.
You can talk to us about your collections, 802-655-6672. But we did start out the conversation talking about Gronk. Look, I don't think this is about the draft. I think it does clearly give the Patriots some clarity. I think it helps, but I think it's more precipitated by the fact that Gronk was seen in a bad light for really the first time after this week.
Right, but do you also agree that the timing is not a coincidence?
I think the timing coincides with his screw-up over the weekend more so than the draft.
Really? Okay, I think it's a combination of both.
And then, also, I don't think the drama with Gronk is over because, yes, he's coming back. But did you see his Instagram post?
No.
The Instagram post that said he was coming back, he had a hashtag at the end, and it was from a song. So, Aaron, give us the little clip of that song that's at the end of Gronk's hashtag. Aaron's trying to find it. See, I set that up so beautifully, too.
I know. He's probably eating pizza, too, just like we are.
Well, what he is Aaron's running the ship back at the station. Yes. So he's got like nine people talking to him, and he's trying to listen to us. And Arnie's probably texting him still. Arnie's probably landed in L.A.
Right.
And is elected to text Aaron.
Or he's sitting in some other airport like most times.
Can you imagine Arnie at an airport?
Ugh.
Like, could you imagine someone canceling a flight and Arnie sitting at the terminal wondering? You know, I can just picture Arnie going up and just raising hell at the boarding pass desk.
He doesn't take rejection well at all.
Well, then he shouldn't go into the lane when I'm playing defense anymore then.
Oh!
Ooh. Boom! Nice shot. Aaron, you got that clip?
I do.
Bands will make a dance.
All right, let's hear it.
Bands will make a dance. 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 Bands will make a dance.
So that's Gronk's hashtag.
The hell is that?
Bands make her dance.
Okay.
You know what that means?
No.
That's in a reference to strippers and money, that strippers will dance for money. Gronk wants money. That's his hashtag.
Or he wants more strippers.
No, his hashtag is bands make her dance, which means money makes me play.
Okay.
That's what he wants. Give Gronk more money. I don't think the drama's over, Rich.
I definitely would not have figured that out by listening to that noise.
You don't listen to Lil Wayne, Drake, and Juicy J?
Who?
Lil Wayne.
I've heard of him.
Weezy, sometimes they call
him. Isn't Drake the Toronto guy?
Yes.
Yeah, see, that's not all hopeless.
He might be wearing a Maple Leafs somewhere
that's
tonight.
That's too bad. I wish him nothing.
Bands make her dance. Look, you laugh at it. And it is a song chorus, but I think there's some meaning there. I think Gronk wants more money, as I've thought from the start of this whole thing.
All I care about is that he's playing this year, and let's go. Let's get this draft over with and get the baseball and hockey and basketball, and football will come when it comes.
Bands make her dance. That's Gronk's messaging to the Patriots. We are live, the huddle at 4 Carmichael Street in Essex. We are here until 6:20. When we come back, Bruins Leafs Game 7.
Yeah.
Who has more pressure on them? That's next on 101.3 ESPN.
And you thought the ESPN network hosts were opinionated.
Unsupportable opinion.
It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, we are back. We are live at the UPS store for Carmichael Street in Essex. And really, we're not joking. We say this. This place is mobbed right now.
Well, it's funny. It was fairly quiet for the first 20 minutes or so, and then ever since about 4:20, 4:30, it's been crazy in here. And it's all fans of the show, and they're bringing us stuff, and it's awesome.
I know people are joining, or people are bringing us stuff. And Beth, who's Arnie's wife, she texts in. She goes, Arnie is sitting in traffic and losing all his hair, and he's already lost most of his hair.
I was going to say he only has 8 hairs left.
Game 7 is tonight.
Do we have to do this?
We do.
I'm so nervous.
Bruins Maple Leafs, we've got it for you on 960 The Zone. The coverage starts at 7 o'clock. And we started off the show talking about this, and we're going to end the show talking about this. You think the Bruins are under more pressure tonight.
Absolutely.
But I look at it and say it's the Maple Leafs.
Now, why is that?
I look at it and say it's the Maple Leafs for a couple of reasons. Number one, this is a franchise that carries the expectation of an entire country on its shoulders. And even though Winnipeg is in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, second round.
Winnipeg is still, look, it's a new old hockey market, okay?
No, Canada doesn't depend on Winnipeg.
No.
You're right. Toronto's the largest city. It's, along with Montreal, definitely the biggest win in the tradition in hockey, yeah.
In terms of, you know, it's an original six franchise. It's the biggest team, well, it's the biggest remaining team in the biggest remaining province in the biggest hockey country in the world. They have not won one playoff series since 2004.
Yep.
I think you're looking at a 14-year drought for this organization in that market. I think instantly that puts you under a lot of pressure. And then you're going to throw in some of the other things that go into this series. We talk a lot, and I'm going to talk about this on Champlain Valley Game Night too, but we talk a lot about windows and how long teams have to compete. And you look at the Maple Leafs and you say, well, their three best players are under the age of 21 when Matthews and Nylander and Marner.
Yep.
So you look at them and say they're all under 21. That window should be open forever. Well, Nylander is a restricted free agent at the end of the year, at the end of this year. Matthews and Marner are restricted free agents, are unrestricted free agents after next year. So you may not be able to keep this young great core together forever. So you got to win while you've got it, and that's right now.
When did they sign their contracts? At 15?
Well, that's how they work. Because like same thing with Donato. Donato is going to be a free agent after just 2 years in the NHL. That was part of him coming. That was part of his agreement to sign, is that he was going to sign just a 2-year deal. McAvoy's in the same in the same situation. They don't have these guys at affordable, cheap prices for very long.
It's not like baseball where you just sign a guy for 8 years. Granted, you give him insane amounts of money to do it, but you've got him in your pocket for quite a while. It's okay. So, I mean, I'm not going to change my mind because I'm just not going to.
Yeah.
But the reason why I say Boston is, A, they had a 3-1 series lead. They were dominating. B, they're at home. They shouldn't lose this game. They're the higher seed. Everything about this series says Boston, and I understand no one's surprised it went seven, but when you're up 3-1 and two of potentially three final games of a seven-game series are in your rink, you cannot lose in a seven-game series.
I think we look at this in opposing ways, and I think we look at this in a macro versus micro lens, because in the micro, I could probably be swayed that the Bruins are in a more pressure-packed situation, as for all the reasons you just said. But macro, I just look at it and I say 15 years of underachieving by Maple Leaf fan standards, and you finally get this young group, and now you don't even know if you can keep it together forever. And even if you can keep those guys together, I mean, Van Riemsdyk is a free agent at the end of the year. Plekanec, who's a guy who you acquired, he's a free agent at the end of the year. It's just difficult, and I look at it and I say, more listeners are here. They're all stealing pizza. It's
stealing.
Not stealing. It's free. It's okay.
You can, yeah. Don't, you don't have to hide it. It doesn't cost you anything.
So I look at the Maple Leafs and I say, with a long term lens, I just think this team is under more pressure.
Okay, I'll give you north of the border. Absolutely. I mean, no question about it. Everybody north of the border, and I believe me, we know a lot of Maple Leafs fans around here. So, are you listening, Ryan Matlack, the world's biggest Maple Leaf fan? So, look, I understand, especially with what you've presented, that they're carrying the weight of a nation right now. And obviously, everything that's happened in Toronto over the last 48 hours is another thing. You can't emphasize how important that is for that city to begin to recuperate from something so awful. And if you have to do it through sports, then so be it. This is a great time for Toronto right now, between the Blue Jays and the Raptors and the Maple Leafs. I mean, they have got it rolling up there.
This is the sixth day in history that the Leafs, Raptors, Blue Jays, and Toronto FC are playing on the same day.
Oh,
it's only the
soccer,
sixth,
right?
Yeah, it's only the sixth time in history that is happening.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you see the excitement up there. I mean, you see the thousands of people in Maple Leaf Square. I mean, it's a huge deal up there, and I get that. I just look at this not so much as a Bruins fan, but as from a Bruins standpoint, I think, and just say, you blow a 3-1 lead with potentially two home games, that just can't happen. That's where I think all the pressure. I mean, especially with the fact that they just had the season. If you had asked me this 4 months ago, you know, when the Bruins were, you know, sitting in sixth, seventh place before they went on that crazy run in the middle of the winter, I would have said, oh, that's great. They made the playoffs. I mean, that was our only goal in the beginning of the year. But now they're where they are, 1 point out of having the best, you know, the most points in the Eastern Conference. You can't lose in the first round.
Can I win the mistake of the day on our listeners? Is that something that's viable?
Well, everyone's mad at me about stuff, so why not? You be, yeah, sure.
Well, Glenn in Moncton says Toronto has had the Bruins' number in playoffs over the last few years. Since what? When is that the case?
What?
In 2013,
the Bruins all-time collapse.
The Bruins. They were in the process of collapsing,
yes.
But they ended up winning that series. The Maple Leafs haven't won a playoff series since 2004. At what point do they have the Bruins number in the playoffs?
Hopefully not tonight. It's all I care about right now.
Glenn in Moncton is one of our best listeners
and
one of our best texters. But Glenn, I don't see any scenario in which I could present an argument that the Maple Leafs have had the Bruins number.
Maybe he started early tonight with a celebration.
Do you want the numbers on Game 7? Get this. The Bruins, this is their first Game 7 since 2014, which they lost to the Canadiens, but they are 13-12 all-time in Game 7s. 13-12. They've played the highest number of Game 7s of any NHL franchise. This is the 26th Game 7 for the Bruins. And if you want to be nervous, Rich, here's why. This is the Maple Leafs came back to win only one series in franchise history when trailing 3-1, 1942 against the Red Wings.
Oh,
so they have done it before.
Okay, so I thought you were saying that I would remember that.
No, they've done it before.
I mean, I'm old, but I'm not that old. I mean, look, the thing about tonight is, you know, I don't like to look at point out, well, they've only, you know, they're 13-12. I don't really kind of look at statistics based on things that happened 50 years ago to try to explain who's going to win tonight.
Yes.
But I'll tell you what, that top line of the Bruins scoring totals is mystifying to me. I've never seen such a skew, you know, such a skewing of numbers from one side to the other. It's absolutely extreme. I mean, the Marchand-Bergeron-Pasternak line has 6 goals and 17 assists in the 3 wins. They have nothing, not a point in the 3 losses. If anyone scores the first goal for Boston tonight, let's make it the top line.
Yeah, that is perplexing. Keys to the game continue to be with me as they always are, and it's cliche to think this. I think penalties and penalty minutes taken is a massive thing here.
Absolutely.
And it was something that the Bruins exploited early on in this series. 5 power play goals in the first 2 games. They've only had 1 in the 4 games since then.
Yep.
And then something that you have thought about more than me, because you've been a hockey fan far longer than I have, and you've been a Bruins fan specifically, as I'm continuing to play catch-up here on my hockey knowledge. But Tuukka Rask's performance in Game 7s has not been all that good. He's 1-2 all-time in Game 7s with the Bruins, and his save percentage is under 90%.
It's funny because I was driving to work today, I was just like, who's going to win this game? This is a real hard game to pick because you look in goal, Anderson or Rask. Anderson's been an absolute brick wall through their wins. So what makes you believe he's not going to come out and do that tonight? He could give up six goals. I have absolutely no idea where this game is going to go, but I would give advantage in net to the Maple Leafs, but I think there's something to be said for the fact that the Bruins are going to, the fans in that garden tonight are going to be blowing the roof off of that place, and I think that's good for maybe a goal.
Glenn in Moncton says, sorry, just got through Pine Street. Traffic got it backwards. The Bruins have had the Maple Leafs number. So, Glenn, I don't know if that's true or not, but I'll give you credit because you are in a traffic zone.
Well, if nothing else, if you're on Pine Street, there's a good chance you're going to have to get your undercarriage fixed in the next couple of days.
My complex has fixed a lot of the potholes, and they've done so filling it in with dirt and rocks. I mean, I appreciate the effort, but I don't know if that's the most effective way.
And we're right here, in Essex, heading towards Essex Center, in Essex Junction and Carmichael Street here at the UPS. And, I mean, every light on 15 has had this huge construction thing that they're doing all the way to the end in Essex Center. I have no idea what they're doing. I just know that it's made for some massive potholes.
One more note on Tuukka today. Again, 1-2 in game sevens with the Bruins. He's allowed 3 goals at least in each game, and he does have less than 85% on his save percentage. Ooh. He lost in 2010 against Philly.
Yeah.
He lost against Montreal in 2014.
Yes,
and indeed. The only win was against Toronto in 2013 in a game in which he started out awful.
Yes.
And they were down 4-1, and then the Bruins came back and scored a bunch of goals in the last 5 minutes of the game.
The miracle. It was absolutely a miracle. And yet, at the same time, part of me says the Bruins are going to come out and win this thing 6-1. I mean, this is an impossible game to pick to me.
When you're relying on the hotness of a goaltender, you're, for a bad pun, you're playing with fire. And Anderson has been really good in all of the Maple Leafs wins, and he was very bad in the first two games of the series.
Well, that's the thing that's so weird about this. How often do you come into a Game 7 where one team has been atrocious in three of their losses? Well, both teams have been atrocious in their three losses, and the other team has been dominating in their three wins. I mean, it just, you very rarely see a Game 7 when you look at things statistically and go, I have no idea, because there's been no in-between. Everybody is either playing A-plus hockey or F hockey. There haven't been any B-minus games.
All the talk, all the speculation, all the predictions, we get the answers tonight. Game 7, Bruins Maple Leafs from Boston. We'll have the coverage for you 7 o'clock over on AM 960 The Zone. When we come back, last story standing, where does criminal and prognosticator intersect? We'll tell you that. That's next, 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment, Last Story Standing time, live here at the UPS store, 4 Carmichael Street, Essex Junction. Arnie back tomorrow. Rich, Last Story Standing today. This is one I think is interesting. Now, have you ever heard of the former rap mogul Suge Knight?
Really?
You haven't heard
asking me that?
You haven't heard of Suge Knight?
I'm not familiar with Mr. Suge, no.
Well, Suge Knight used to work with Dr. Dre, Tupac, all the big boys.
I've heard of them.
Of the famed Death Row Records, Snoop Dogg.
All right.
So he's awaiting trial for murder, and he's also in court for another separate incident. Before his hearing started, the judge asked him who he thought would win the NBA Finals. So there you go. So he's in court, not for the murder, but for another charge, and the judge wants to know his NBA thoughts.
Gosh. And he went right to Vegas, the judge did, with a phone call. So.
And he said that he thought that the Rockets would win, just so you know.
And that's a judge. That's a judge. There's somebody, now was he a...
So the judge wants to know Suge Knight's NBA Finals prediction. Suge Knight says Rockets. That'll do it for us.
I was going to say, does this answer mean guilty or innocent?
I don't know.
I mean, well,
I don't know.
Pressure.
I don't know what the lesser charge, what the lesser court offense is for, but I know he's also going trial for murder at some point. That'll do it for us. The people here have been great. The listeners have been great. All the people outside watching us have been great. Rich is leaving. Champlain Valley game night is next. Arnie's back tomorrow. It's 101.3 ESPN.